The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Yeah, yeah. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the September 21st edition of the Sunday Scotch Society. Why the 21st of September is noteworthy is because that day happens to be the day that I began my journey on this mortal coil. So,
stop it.
Today is my birthday.
I knew it not.
Oh, you did?
Happy returns, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So, I have given myself a present today, which is I have relinquished from myself the need and responsibility to think, and I have apportioned that section of this show to you. So today, in honor of my birthday, I am simply going to sit and respond. And also in honor of my birthday, I am going to sip an Irish whiskey today. Irish whiskeys are, on the whole, in my experience, a little softer, a little sweeter than Scotch whiskies, and definitely not as alcohol forward, not as oaky, not as let's call it dangerous as bourbon whiskies. You know, they are from my mind much more contemplative sort of a drink. And today's Irish whiskey for me is the Busker Irish whiskey. Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about this whiskey while you and I have conversation that will be led by you at your convenience. But before we do that, I must ask, given that we're today doing the pod in separate locations, what do you have to tipple upon?
Well, I'm going to do the thing and ask you to just give one guess.
That is a single malt scotch or a very aged rum. It has that very sort of deep corked sound that comes from age and potency. But given that it's you and you don't really like paint thinner or stripping your gears, I would guess that is maybe the Aberfeldy 12.
I'm going to give you high marks for your analysis, but the ultimate answer is wrong. This is the Ron Abuelo 7 years.
I knew that it was either a single malt or a rum. Mm-hmm. I could tell that, yeah.
I told you, I give you high marks on analysis.
Mm-hmm. listen to me, my
friend. Very good.
The Ron Abuelo is one of Panama's most amazing outputs. I love
and
that
it is,
rum.
It has a fan in me.
I love that rum, boy. Yeah.
Many people to this rum since encountering it.
Yeah. I actually like the younger ones more than I like the aged one, which is not often the case. Usually as a spirit ages, it picks up more character, it increases in complexity as well as potency. But to me, the younger, like the 7-year-old Ron Abuelo is to me like yards more delicious than the older ones. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, I haven't tasted the older ones, but I can't imagine. This has to be peak right here.
The distillers probably would disagree with you and talk, like I say, about complexity and richness of character and all of that stuff. And they would probably be right.
This
But
is your birthday. This is not a time for reason.
my
This is
brother.
a time for making claims and acting as if we know everything about the world.
Which we do. What the heck? You're acting like we don't.
No
I will
pushback on your birthday. I'll give you that one.
I will toast to your good health with my Busker Irish Whiskey Triple
To
Cask.
yours, happy birthday, and may we see many more from you, sir.
Indeed. And I suppose doing the thing in this format means that I will tell you about the Busker Nose before we go too much further. The nose is, I mean, it's a light, fragrant, fruity, without being overly ripe. It has a little is that it's almost like a little allspice, but not overpoweringly so, just barely there as a hint. And a slight burn from the alcohol, on the nose. So you can tell that it's a good drink. It's not I mean, it's 80 proof, so it's not particularly strong as far as whiskeys go, but it is also not weak. But the most prominent sort of character on the nose is semi-sweet. Not sugary, not like candy, but yeah, like yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
It's strange how many notes that has in common with this rum.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say, well, immediate difference, very alcohol forward on the nose.
Yeah, there's a rum.
Yeah, to the point, that does sting. You get in there a little too much. Further back, like just the most pleasantly powerful vanilla, with a hint just softened by a sweetness that is most like a just perfectly ripe, not over, but just when they just come into their ripeness, Cavendish, banana. And there's some spice behind there, but it's very mellow, and I can't really distinguish. But there's a little bit of spicy kick there. Just supporting. I'll tell you what, I'm not wasting time going in for the palate here.
Well, go for it. I mean, do you think?
Oh man. I hope you have never mixed this with anything. That would be a tragedy.
My particular personality prevents me from mixing most of my liquors of choice. I don't believe in well, let me rephrase, because I don't want it to come off as if I'm judging people. It's not about being judgmental. It is that my choice is to drink the whiskey or the spirit neat. I drink my tequila neat. I drink my rums neat. I drink my whiskeys neat. In the event that I'm having something else, I will usually try it neat first. Even things like vodka and gin, if I'm going to be drinking them, chances are I'll be drinking something that can be sipped, as opposed to something that needs to be gulped, or I don't do shots. generally, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I will have never mixed the Ron Abuelo with anything. But that's, I want to be clear, a matter of personal preference, not necessarily a matter of judgment. Even though, I won't lie, there is a small bit of judgment if you're mixing old rum with stuff.
Oh, man, this is... So it's soft, it's round, but very soft. Most of the notes on the nose are just amplified. It is... The legs on this thing are pretty serious. And so the finish is lingers quite a bit on the tongue. And I just have no complaints about this. This, you know, when you're sitting down sweating at night, the last thing you want is, you know, a straight, and I got to pop out a vodka and start sipping on that. But this is, I don't know, man. It's almost like an ice cream. And just sit and enjoy on a hot summer's day or night, like we've been having for many, many weeks.
You're right, because we have this this opportunity, so to speak, to enjoy these rums or whiskeys, in the case of the Busker Triple Cask that I'm drinking, and your soliloquy just makes me happy. Do you know what I mean? It makes me feel like on my birthday, for sure. It's a good day to be alive and able to share in this kind of an experience with a friend, even though we're doing it by remote. You know what I'm saying?
Here, here. I will drink to that.
The first sip of the Busker triple cask is... Oh, man. So it's you will be able to certify this. You often, when we are sipping these concoctions, the nose gives a promise about what the flavors are going to be, and to an extent, the aromas that you get on the nose almost sort of train your tongue and your mind to expect certain things. And so you're looking for those flavors to come through when you're sipping. But there's a great deal of the time, there is a disconnect between the nose and the actual flavors that Indeed. You taste when you're sipping these whiskeys.
It's almost a, not disconcerting, but it's certainly a strange experience when first you stop to take in the nose of these things, and then you realize that taste is not, that's not what I expected.
Yeah. And it's not even, because I can hear in my mind, I can hear some people arguing that is because of quality, you know, that the higher quality spirit will taste like it smells. And to an extent, I agree that does play a role. But also in this current disposition where distillers and brewers have such an opportunity to tweak and play with things, that they can create a sense of expectation on the one level without necessarily fulfilling that expectation as you are sipping the spirit, right? And Like, to me, the perfect example is these spirits that smell of caramel. And when you taste them, you don't taste caramel. What you get is maybe a hint of vanilla and a strong burn. Do you know what I'm saying? But there are some spirits that give you that caramel kind of aroma on the nose that when you sip them, that that expectation is fulfilled. And it's those ones that are on the top of my personal list. Things like the Balvenie 21-year-old Portwood single malt whiskey. You know, it's a scotch that is aged in the pipes that they used to hold port in. And so it picks up some of the port sweetness and some of the port roundness and some of the port sugars. And those components that are hinted at in the aroma and in the nose, they definitely come through when you sip that whiskey. And that's a very long way around of saying that this this Busker triple cask. It gives me hints of tropical fruits and vanilla, and it gives you a sense that you're going to be tasting something a little sweet, and then when you sip it, all of those things definitely come through on the tongue. It's a little sweet, it's a little fruity. It's a little malty, and it's really, for a whiskey, incredibly smooth. It's not, as I say, it's not very strong. It's only 80 proof, which means that people who like a little more robust whiskeys might find this underwhelming, you know, because it doesn't really pack a punch. But it's such a nice... It's such a tasty sip. I like it so much. I like it so much. I can't wait for us to do the show. I can't wait for us to do the pod in person.
It's still
again.
A show. Even though it's a pod. It's a pod. It's a show.
Yeah. But I can't wait for us to be together again, is what I'm saying. Because I'm gonna bring a bottle of the Busker triple cask. Because I need you to taste this. And I would like to see and get your reaction from it, your reaction to it, because I think it's definitely one of the more honest whiskeys that I've tasted in a good while. And given that you don't like paint thinner, as I mentioned earlier, I think you would really enjoy this whiskey. It's like, let me sit down in front of the fireplace if I had a fireplace. Let me smoke my pipe if I had a pipe. Let me read some James Joyce and enjoy a little Busker Irish whiskey triple cask. It's that kind of whiskey.
Busker, everyone. I look forward to it.
Yeah. I don't know what your... what your experience is with Irish whiskeys, but they are, as I say, overall they tend to be a lot lighter. Well, a lot lighter than the Scotches, and definitely lighter than the bourbons. But they make up for that lightness, in my view, with almost a sweetness. And also a complexity under the sweetness that is difficult to beat. You know, there's a reason, for instance, that Jameson is so popular around the world.
Yeah, has a surprising fan of me. I did not think
Oh yeah, no,
that it was going to be what it was.
Jameson is we're gonna deal with Jameson as well, because it has a couple of different expressions that I think are contenders for our list. But Jameson is definitely something you should have on your bar at all times. It's incredibly good whiskey. The other kind of Irish whiskeys that I think are sort of universally delicious. I don't, okay, this next one, I'm going to ask you some questions. Are you familiar with an Irish author by the name of Andrew Greeley?
I am not.
So Andrew Greeley is a writer of fiction, and one of his sort of fictional characters is an Irish priest by the name of Father John Ryan. They call him Blackie for some reason. And Blackie Ryan has this fascination with Bushmills Irish whiskey, and in particular, Bushmills Blackbush. It's actually those novels that started me drinking Irish whiskey in the first place, which was my entree into drinking scotches and bourbons and whiskeys in general. All of my tastes have come from books over the years, right? But Bushmills is another of these Irish whiskeys that I think everybody should have on the bar. And Blackbush is one that you and I are going to try as we continue down the pod for sure. The next one, I don't know if you remember, we had a couple of expressions of this when we were doing Whiskey Wednesdays after the Hump Day Huddle at Crypto Isle, is the Teeling Irish whiskey. You remember those guys? Yeah, the Teeling is like the other superstar Irish whiskey that I feel is worth having in the list. But then my top two, aside from those sort of three, Jameson, Bushmills, and Teeling, are the my favorite Irish whiskey of all time is the Red Breast 12-year-old pot still Irish whiskey. It is a rare, fairly rare Irish whiskey. And I think you should make a note to have me on the lookout, because I probably won't remember. But we if we could find it, whenever we see a bottle somewhere, it'll probably end up costing $200 to $300 for the bottle. But it is definitely worth it's definitely worth having us spend that money on the whiskey. Because I would like for you to have it. I would like for you to see it. I would like for you to taste it. And the other whiskey that I think is just splendid is a gift that a friend gave me. I don't know if you ever met, his name was Johnny English, which is a weird name for an Irishman. But Johnny w found out that I liked whiskey, and he was in charge of their communications. And he found out that I was a whiskey drinker, and he brought me a bottle of the Tullymordu Phoenix. First of all, a limited edition Irish whiskey is going to be something special anyway, so we're aware of that. But let me tell you, my brother, I have not been able to find that bottle here in Nassau. The last time I saw the bottle was at the Whiskey Exchange when I was in London, but I already had other things on my to-do list, so I kind of could not pick up a bottle while I was in London. But the next time I see a bottle of the Tullymore Dew Phoenix, if I have to sell a kidney, which I won't have to because it's not that expensive, I will make sure to pick that up, because that is something that you and I, as whiskey drinkers, definitely need to have an entire show dedicated to. So, you know, that's, I look forward to that day. That day is coming. But back to the Busker Irish Whiskey Triple Cask. Yeah, it's a great sort of expression of this style of Irish whiskeys. I like it a lot.
I look forward to it.
Yeah,
this is the best way. You have friends, mm-hmm, who have interests, mm-hmm, right? And you know, you're not going to become as good as they are in their interest, but you can tag along, and they will show you the ropes, and you will grow in that interest. But having a guide like you, you know, that's the best.
I mean, okay. And I listen, I don't actually disagree. I agree with you 100%. But I feel also, I guess what my immediately instinctual response was that the journey is always better with company.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Almost anything.
Well, yeah. Okay. No, I would even go so far as to say anything. Anything is better with company.
No. Hard no.
Are you kidding? What are you talking about?
We don't need to get into it, but hard no.
No, my brother. I am telling you, I am convinced. I guess let me rephrase.
My contemplative space. Mm. I need the world. Particularly, I need people to go away or to leave me alone, and I go away for a substantial amount of time. Now, to each their own. The variety in personalities is one of the great joys of life. But alone, and certain things done alone, some of the best things in life. But most stuff, company is excellent.
So I agree with you that alone is better, generally, for certain things. But I don't know that company is, if it's the right company, I think alone is equally as good. If somebody is alone in their own world, while also being in proximity to you being alone in your own.
That certainly increases the amount of things that we could say company is good to have. Yeah, but still, there are those few things.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
So, speaking of alone.
Uh-oh.
I'm curious. I don't know what type of experiences, if any, you've had in the hospital. Any hospital?
I've had a couple of different hospital journeys. In the Bahamas, my track record with hospitals in the Bahamas has not been the best. Let's put it that way. Me and PMH have a very complicated relationship.
Mm.
Because some of the decisions made by people at PMH resulted in outcomes that I feel could have been, if not avoided outright, then mitigated in large degree by by simple process or by simple processes that were ignored in favor of what seemed to me at the time and upon reflection purely an exercise in indulging one's ego. I do not have an overall positive view of Princess Margaret Hospital and the decisions made by people who work there. Overall, healthcare in the Bahamas has been positive to me. I have brothers and sister who are engaged in healthcare. I have cousins and family members who are engaged in providing healthcare. My favorite aunt, whose birthday was a couple of days ago, shout out to Aunt Rhoda, was a physiotherapist and for a long time was on the staff at Princess Margaret Hospital. So I have my immediate circle is rife with people who provide healthcare in the Bahamas and are affiliated with the hospital in particular and health clinics and private practice as well. So I have some experience, but the most personal experience that I have was not positive.
Okay. So I largely, I'm going to extrapolate from your connections to positive people and their impact in healthcare in the Bahamas in general. You know, I know I know a few good doctors. I have experienced, I don't, you know these people except for encountering them either myself or along with family members. Some people who let's just say they shouldn't be in healthcare, in my opinion. But what I've been disturbed from mostly over the years is PMH. Even if all the good people we knew worked there, would it be enough? Because there are problems at this place that are, they seem currently insurmountable, right?
Mm-hmm.
30 years ago, I had occasion to visit someone on the male ward. And to my young self, it felt to me like I was entering a World War II movie. This was 30 years ago. So, you know, I'm not casting aspersions yet. So, you know, there's old faded bed sheets up on the wall as curtains. There's people writhing about and moaning. There's dirty walls. The floors are clean, so to speak, but like, you know, you could tell it was done with a dirty mop. Utter lack of privacy and just on and on, right? I'm just like, wow. Well, I hope I never end up here. And, you know, what? Hopefully some positive things are going to happen. The next experience I had a PMH was that my grandmother, who had dementia at the time already, she had a serious emergency. She had to have an emergency hysterectomy. So that happens successfully. And she's on the ward, and the nurses are just being utterly negligent, number one. And number two, when my grandmother fell out of her bed, they picked her up, put her back in it, and pretended like nothing happened. What had actually happened was that she broke her hip. And so after a fight that was mercifully short, the hospital itself, I don't think anyone was ever reprimanded, but the hospital itself saw that they could not cover it up, and they decided, okay, we're going to, on our dime, put her in the private ward and treat this hip problem. And so she was in there for, can't remember how many weeks that takes. So that was that. Now, I'm trying to remember, 25-ish years ago, let's say 2025, right? Years ago. So I'm thinking, hey man, it's 2024. Things have to have gotten better.
Ah, sorry.
So someone said to me, they think that post-COVID, it's gotten worse because there's so much less access from the public than there used to be. I don't know the full accuracy of what access there is now. It certainly feels that way, having had some interaction, but not very, very much, right? So I don't know the full extent of who could go where and visit in what hours, et cetera, et cetera. Now I'm going to speak very, very broadly, and perhaps the listener might think it's a little too vague, right? Because what prompted me to talk about this today is the experience of a friend of mine. They went to PMH with severe abdominal pain, took 9 hours to see the doctor. I don't know how triage works there. I'm not saying that everyone ahead didn't have to be. That could perhaps just be an indictment on, hey, we are under capacity. When they were finally seen, they got a diagnosis which gave them some pain meds and essentially some laxatives. They were told, let these happen for take their course for a few days to, quote, clean you out. Thing is, they didn't have any problems with bowel movements. So, a little bit strange. They continued to have abdominal pain, came back to A&E, were told you didn't let the meds we gave you run their course. So ain't nothing to do here. Go away. So then saw a private physician. The private physician said, yeah, you have appendicitis and need to be operated on now. Do you have health insurance? Well, clearly they didn't because they began this journey at PMH. So they said, okay, well, too bad for you. Bye. So now they're back at PMH. Now, go ahead,
No,
please.
I am being quiet by dint. Half my teeth are cracked. I'm clenching my teeth so hard. When you finish your story, we will have another. Please continue.
Yeah. So back at PMH, there's a description of the ward given to me that sounds worse than my first experience having visited someone there. Now, this is secondhand. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. This person has No reason to lie. My thought is that this could be verified pretty easily, which makes me way more concerned. Like, either it's the boldest lie ever, or even though it can be verified so easily, like, this is just the way it is. It's commonplace. This is how it goes. I'm going to spare you details of a lot of what happens, but let's just say they were moved from there. I have to say this part, the new ward they were moved to, it is claimed to me that the nurse said, "Yeah, this is the piss ward." Excuse me, what? What? Sorry, what just happened? Did a nurse just say that they wheeled someone into the piss ward? Apparently, it's aptly named because it just reeks of urine. So, I'm bringing this up because I am super concerned. Right? I lived a long time with a huge gap where I didn't have health insurance. Right? I had one sort of emergency health problem where my wife refused to let me go to PMH. And I think it was the right call. And I'm super thankful. But I have had so many stories given to me over the years, right? And it's just something that's so large. You put it at the back of your mind. And if you're in a position where you don't have health insurance, you're just, you can't take on that mental burden. And if you are in a position where you do have health insurance, you can't take on the burden of the suffering of other people that is probably going on, right? Now, I am not blaming anyone in particular, but this is. There's no other way to describe this than utter insanity. Now, I know a few of the doctors who work up there, right? And they do their bit to try and make it better. But there are so many people there who they really need to be removed from interaction with people completely, much less be in a health facility. And I'm talking from administration to nurses to doctors to grounds, the entire thing, right? And a huge question for me, you could clarify this for me, but just from memory, I think the new hospital is supposed to be on the order of $250 million, right?
Just over, yes.
Yeah. I'm not saying that we don't need new facilities.
We can talk about that too.
I'm not saying that, right?
But
But
do we
what
need
is the
those new
point?
facilities that are swamped though? But okay, anyway, go
Well, listen. We could get
ahead.
into that as well, right? But I'm just focusing on the allocation of 250 million-ish dollars to build a new facility, which has pros and cons. We won't get into where it should be placed and all the rest of that, right? But I haven't heard how it's going to be any different in terms of how things are done than what we have now. Because even though we could really do with new facilities, let's say we waved the magic wand and made the current location brand new, I still would try my damnedest to make sure that anyone that I knew never had to go there. Like, this is a serious thing. It honestly blew my mind that that the level of incompetence and disregard and also some malevolence, I have to say, is still going on. I was told that kids in high school and the first years of college, when they write essays, they now write of when I grew up as, instead of the 80s or the 90s, they refer to it as the late 20th century. So to put this in perspective, right? This is the third decade of the 21st century. And this is the state of things for many, many, many people here. And it's not as if I'm coming out here with solutions right now, right? I just felt that it's important to not file this away in the back of my head right now, to say something. I chose some specific examples, but we all know many other people with many more stories and have your own personal stories, etc. I want to first voice this to anyone who's listening, and second, I invite anyone who does have some solutions or ways that things could be impacted positively, to reach out. Because, like I said, this is insane.
So,
And not, I will say, in broader terms, I'm disappointed with the entirety of the healthcare system. I'm not going to give any more specifics, but I am going to say that it turns out that even that diagnosis was wrong. There was something in the body, but completely different that was happening. So even the second opinion was incorrect. What's going on here? I know we have competent doctors. What the hell? So it's more of a rant than anything else, really.
Okay, am I free to join in your rant?
Sure, yeah.
My son Kyle
Whoa, wow.
was we I was this is why I try to stay away from this subject. My son Kyle was born at PMH in June of 2007, and he was born with an incredibly rare condition called Apert syndrome. It's about between one to about one in 65,000 to 200,000 births, depending on which study you cite overall. And that goes up to about one in a million among Black people. Right. So he was born with this condition, and nobody at PMH had ever seen Apert syndrome. That is how rare it is. And so, of course, because it's so rare, it makes sense that nobody at the hospital would ever have seen it. So the person who was in charge of the neonatal intensive care unit at the time, Dr. Glenn McBegan, came to us the day after he was born and said to us that he that she thought, based on the research that she'd done overnight, that she thought he had something called Apert syndrome, but that we should take him to a craniofacial specialist to see. So the care that he received in NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit, was excellent care. Dr. McDeegan and her team are saints in our family because of the care that they gave my son. Fast forward to him leaving the neonatal intensive care unit. We took him to see Dr. Mutaz Habal, who is a craniofacial specialist in Florida, who does nothing but treat craniofacial issues. This is the entirety of his practice. If anyone could be considered an expert on something like Apert syndrome in our region, it's Dr. Habal. So we took the boy to see Dr. Habal, And Dr. Habal took one look at Kyle after examining him very briefly. Your son has a typical case of Apert syndrome. You know, that's a spectrum of severity. He looks to be on the mild end of the spectrum. He should be fine. So go home and do this, and this, and whatever. So he gave us like five things to do. And once those things were done, come back and see him. He's like, yeah, son should be fine. So we came home. Got set up with care at PMH, ran into a pediatrician. People close to me know who I'm talking about, but I'm not going to call his name on the radio. This individual was offended that we thought that they should follow the directions given by the craniofacial specialist. This individual actually said words to me to the effect that they were Kyle's doctor. They would determine his care. The specialist only wanted his money, only wanted our money. This individual, once again, had never seen Apert syndrome before in their life. They had no idea what Apert syndrome was. They refused until I insisted as firmly as I could that they must do what the specialist said. At least call the specialist and coordinate care. And thereafter, every time we took Kyle to see this individual, their response was, what the specialist say but that? What the specialist say but that? What the specialist say but that? They refused to do the basic thing that Apert syndrome kids all have to have. They literally flat out refused. And the repercussions of that, we are still, you know, sorting through to this day. That individual is a senior member of the medical community related to the Princess Margaret Hospital. And they were that much of an ass. Epically stupid. Their ego was so big that they literally refused to do what a specialist in a condition they had never seen before recommended that they do. Are you hearing me? That Dr. Habal did not charge us a dime to see my son. Not a dime. So this idea that the specialist only wanted our money was absolute horseshit. Fast forward to Kyle being in the intensive care unit. Their care of my son was so lax that he developed bed sores regularly. Then when they moved him to the unit where we could visit him with regularity, which let me tell you, we're going to get back to how the hell a hospital is going to tell the parents of a child that they only have 2 hours to visit their child during the day. How the hell you can have quote unquote visiting hours in a hospital. But anyway, while he was on that ward, it was a regular occurrence for the nurse in charge of the ward to walk through the ward, banging a spoon on a pot and saying, okay, parents, y'all got to go now. Y'all got to go. So wrap it up. Bang, 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 bang. Kyle had been put in a little room kind of off to the front of the ward. And she walked into that room to bang that pot one time. And I looked at her, Matthew, I don't know what she saw in my face, but she turned around and walked up. But I swear to God, if she had banged that pot, I would have done something very, very bad. My personal journey through PMH was hell. With the exception of Dr. McDeegan and her amazing staff at NICU, if I could consign every blasted one of them who looked after Kyle, well, failed to look after Kyle, to the lowest depths of hell, that would not be enough. Now, I've been careful not to talk about this in public because it could very easily seem like sour grapes. And it could also very easily seem like bitterness. But what it did for me was it gave me insight into how tenuous a grip this society and this community has on healthcare at the public level. Because it ain't like me and my family was broke. Do you understand what I'm saying? We just didn't. We could not afford to take the boy away and have him get health care. In fact, the moment I found an opportunity to be able to take him away so that he could get the care that was appropriate for the level of condition that he had, I did so. And let me tell you what I found when I got to the Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. Kyle had a team of doctors, a team of specialists. That was about 13 or 14 people looking after this boy. That is the level of care that his condition rated at one of the premier children's hospitals in the world. And you juxtapose that against this one egomaniac at PMH who refused to listen to a specialist in a condition that he had never seen before. Now, given that my brother and sister and cousins and close friends are doctors who work at PMH as well, I cannot imagine that every doctor at PMH is like that. But the fact that one of their colleagues could be that way should be terrifying to everybody who has to let somebody go and stay in that institution for more than 10 seconds at a time. We should be terrified. And the government is going to spend $290 million on a hospital to replace a hospital that is, we can't just call it outdated. We can't just call it in need of repair. They run out of medication at PMH. Do you hear what I say to you? It's a hospital. It's our national hospital, and they run out of medication regularly. They don't have equipment to manage the care of the people who are in the hospital right now. They have to rent and contract equipment from all over, from other doctors here in town in the private sector, from other jurisdictions around us. They don't have the equipment or the medicine to look after the people who are in the hospital right now.
Yeah.
So
I want the listener to just, I hate to be a downer, but as you sip whatever you're sipping today, listener, just think about it for a bit. Mull it over. You know, sometimes thinking about the serious things is important.
I just want to remind people. I hear you, Matt. Give me 1 second more on the soapbox here. Because this is an issue that has, I think, in addition to political ramifications, it has national development ramifications, right? Fred Papal and the Beck Group. Fred Papal is a Bahamian architect who is in charge of the Beck Group, which is one of the biggest architectural firms in the U.S. Fred is actually now also the chairman of the PGA, by the way. But And he's a good fella. I know him a couple of times. We've talked and hung out. I like him a lot. But this dude was hired and contracted by the government of the Bahamas, both the Ingram and Christie administration, to design a new hospital, starting with a critical care block, right? The $100 million or so that was invested into the building of the critical care block, it is in danger of having been wasted, given the way that it is being maintained. So it isn't just about building facilities, because they spent $100 million on critical care, right? It is about what is the priority that we as a community place on public health? And then how are we expressing that level of priority in the way that our public finances are spent, in the way that the public service is populated, in the way that people in our community who need access to the very basic standards of healthcare can have that access? Yes. Matthew,
yes, sir.
The Busker Irish Whiskey is definitely sweet and smooth, and it is a drink to sip while you have a good conversation like this one was a good conversation today.
I look forward to trying it out with you, man. And yeah, you know, happy birthday, man.
Oh, thank you so very much, brother. I appreciate it. I guess that's it, eh?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you guys next time on the Sunday Scotch Society. Thank you for being a part of our journey, and I know Matthew is going forth to conquer, so I will do the same. Das Vidania.
Ciao.
Check it out.